This is PCJ Radio International.
Radio Berlin International.
Ici Radio Canada. This is Canada.
This is Radio Nederland, the Dutch World Broadcasting System in Hilversum, Holland.
You're tuned to Swiss Radio International in Bern.
This is Free China as a presentation of the Voice of Free China, the international service of the Broadcasting Corporation of China.
This is Radio Havana, Cuba.
Broadcasting from Cuba, free territory in the Americas.
This is Radio South Africa.
This is Yugoslavia Radio Belgrade calling.
This is Israel broadcasting from Jerusalem.
This is Radio Pyongyang of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea.
This is the General Overseas Service of the BBC.
Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Paulette McQuarrie and Keith Perrell.
Well, hello, friends and listeners. It's very nice to have you with us for another edition of the program. Today's show is jam-packed. We begin first with a message that was broadcast by ERT and the Voice of Greece this week.
All of us working for the public Greek radio and television have the will and the potential to contribute to the improvement of the social values, culture, and sports. All of us working for the public Greek radio and television are committed against any effort to be manipulated by any kind of authority. All of us, we are alive, and we will struggle for a new operational framework that will safeguard the independence and the public character of VRT, and will cut any attachment to any government influence and any kind of patronage by different centers of authority. VRT should be open and should belong to all Greek citizens. Anyone who is trying to violently shut down the public Greek radio and television is definitely trying to favor other kind of interest apart from the public one. They are dangerous. We all promise to do our best to keep the public Greek radio and television open. We are asking all of you, Greek and European citizens, to join forces with us to prevent this nightmare. All of us will send a clear message to anyone who is trying to make this nightmare come true that we are alert. ERT should be open.
Well, that was a message that was broadcast on The Voice of Greece just this past week. The Voice of Greece is part of ERT, which is the Greek Public and Radio Network in Greece. As you're probably aware, the Prime Minister of the country decided to shut the network down and then reopen it again in August under a new name and a new restructuring. Well, unfortunately, that really didn't happen. There were a vast amount of protests outside the network, including a Greek court saying it was unconstitutional to shut down the network. The station did go dark, both radio and television, for a few hours, but then came back. But not to the same level that they had been before they were ordered to shut down. I'm sure this is a story that we're going to continue following, as the situation in Greece hasn't really changed that much. Now, Iran. Iran is cited by Reporters Without Borders as one of the five worst nations in the world for its online surveillance. What practical measures can journalists take when covering any type of Iranian news coverage? It could be the recently held elections. What can they do to protect their phones and computers and their stories and their human sources? Next, Richard Ady speaks to Lucia Mollion. She's the head of advocacy and research at Reporters Without Borders in Paris, France.
We see an increase of the surveillance and censorship, specifically online, these past weeks. And it is clearly designed to try to better control the information and impose a news blackout before the elections. We've seen more websites being blocked. The filtering is definitely increasing. And what is actually interesting these past days is you can see also some websites coming from conservative party or close to the conservative conservative politicians who are also being blocked. Recently, the website of Madrom Salari, which is owned by one of the candidates, is barred by the Guardian Council. Other conservative websites have also been closed, and it has prompted actually some journalists close to the Conservative Party to denounce this censorship and this closure of websites.
Well, let's talk about the suggestions you have for reporters who do get a visa. What are you saying people should do before they get on a plane?
Before they go to Iran, journalists should definitely think twice and take some action to get prepared so that they don't have bad surprises when they get into Iran, this enemy of the internet. We know that all foreign journalists will be at the same international hotel. They will have an internet connection that is going to be subject to close surveillance. That's why they need to take some basic protective measures. For instance, before leaving, they should travel with a Virgin computer or reinstall their operating system to make sure that they have something that is completely neutral. If they need to take some files and if it's sensitive files, then they should encrypt them by using PGP or TrueCrypt. They should turn on their firewall on their computer. It's really easy. Install antivirus software, of course, and make sure it's updated. And they should protect, it sounds obvious, but they should also protect computer and mobile phones with passwords. They should encrypt their hard drive. And one of the important thing they should do is to install a VPN, which is basically an application that allows you to establish an encrypted communication tunnel between your computer and a server located outside of the country. And this is going to be making it really difficult for Iranian censors to intercept communications. It can also help the reporters to circumvent the censorship, blocking, filtering imposed by the authorities.
Okay, so say that they've done all that. It's actually quite a lot, and you wouldn't want to be starting this from scratch if you'd never worked with some of the encryption before. But say they've done that, they've got to Iran, they're off the plane. What do they have to do apart from be extra careful when they're there?
Well, I mean, if you, for instance, if you get a document you don't know by someone who you don't know, you don't trust, then you should not open it. You should also try to refrain from using Skype, for instance, which is extremely under surveillance these days. You should also be careful if you meet with some people. You have to be extremely careful of not being followed and making sure they are not being put in danger. But also, as you're a foreign reporter and you're getting into Iran, you have more opportunities than Iranian reporters to be able to go and try to get some stories that the Iranians can't. You can try to visit, for instance, the relatives of the 54 journalists and netizens who are currently in jail. You can try to go and meet their relatives because some of them really want to speak and their work should be known to the rest of the world. You have also to be extremely careful when you send information. If you have really big files and you send them through a satellite connection, then you want to send the big files in stages, and you want also you don't want to stay too long in the same place while you are transmitting files to avoid being located.
What about the mobile, Lucy? I mean, we all use our mobiles more than ever, and of course many of us have smartphones which have enormous capabilities, but you have to be careful with those too, I imagine.
Absolutely. I mean, your mobile phone contains a lot of important information, and the two main mobile phone service operators in Iran are controlled by the Revolutionary Guards. You want also to turn off GPS in the apps that use it if you don't want to be located. And if possible, you will erase your browsing history, because then you may not want the authorities to know what you've been looking at. And we know that even without a SIM card, mobile phones are able to send a lot of information to the nearby relay antenna, and it can actually help locate you. So if you are in a sensitive meeting and you don't want to be located, remove the battery, and this will help not locate you.
These are a lot of measures to take, and I'm wondering how it is going to leave journalists able to get on with the work they're there to do, which is to go out and meet as many people as they can and get different perspectives and report it.
Absolutely. It's always a balance between taking some precautions and still being able to go out, report, collect information. But what is really important is journalists don't want to put their sources in danger. And what is at stake today in Iran is really high. You know that when you're meeting with people or when you're trying to exchange sensitive information, a foreign reporter may have some trouble, may be expelled. An Iranian journalist may go to jail for years. So you have to be extremely careful. And some of these advices may sound really complicated, but removing a battery is not a big deal. And using some of the encryption tools as TrueCrypt, it's really, really easy.
Lucie Malianf from Reporters of the Borders in Paris, France, speaking with Richard Aidy. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. In India, people for a long time have relied on telegrams to announce births and deaths. But after 159 years, yes, 159 years, the service is being discontinued. India now has about 600 million active mobile phone users, and the number of telegrams sent has dwindled to around 5,000 a day. At one time, there were hundreds of thousands a day. The state-owned telecommunications company, BSNL, says it's no longer viable and has decided to close the service next month. Wari Lari speaks to Santosh Dalis from the Times of India.
Well, I think it has simply outlived its utility. The usage of the telegraph has really dropped to a very, very small number. And I think the whole mobile phone revolution has kind of passed it by and made it largely sort of irrelevant.
How even, though, is that distribution of technology and communications across the country?
Well, because, you know, it's actually the mobile phones that have changed things. And in a sense, the fact that, you know, you have close to almost, a billion sort of phones in India, which is a staggering number. It's not a number that I guess almost anyone anticipated. I mean, one imagined that the mobile phone would kind of penetrate to the relatively more affluent sections, but it's gone way beyond that. Having done so, the idea of being connected all the time is now something that most people take for granted, and the need for a telegraph is clearly now a thing of the past.
Do we know how many telegraphs are sent in India, or telegrams?
Now the number has apparently crawled to about, I was reading somewhere about 300. Roughly, it just crawled to a few hundred telegrams per day from the earlier volume, which was running in millions. So it has been a very dramatic kind of a drop.
Yeah, it sounds very dramatic. Did you receive any? Like, have you got any recollection of getting a telegram?
Oh, yeah, lots of them. Actually, the telegram in you know, when I grew up, and which is a long time back, about, you know, I'm talking about 3 or 4 decades ago. And you're talking about, you know, the idea of a telegram was one of those things that came in and was always something that was filled with fear at a certain level, because nobody would be sending you a telegram unless something had happened.
Mm.
And sometimes it was good news, but it wasn't. So, I mean, it always was something that there was trepidation involved every time you heard the telegram guy sort of announce himself.
Yes, I can imagine. It's extraordinary to try to put yourself in that position, in those shoes, receiving. I mean, obviously, I've never received one. A lot of people in Australia, the younger Australians, would never have received one. And as you say, fewer and fewer Indians are as well. But there are some people who are employed in this industry. How many job losses would be flowing from this?
Well, you know, it is run by the government. So, I mean, I don't think you'll see, because, and it's part of the post and telegraph system, which has kind of been sort of, you know, dwindling of its own accord. I mean, even regular mail, you find that the volumes have dropped. But there aren't immediate job losses, because that's the way the government works. It kind of absorbs people, you know, in you know, largely they end up being underemployed. But they're not recruiting anybody else, and haven't been for the last, I think, many years. But I don't think in the Indian situation there is a dramatic job loss that happens.
That was Santosh Desai from the Times of India speaking with Waleed Ali. Now, speaking of telegrams and, well, more precisely, radiograms, I just want to remind you about PCJ Radio International's weekly radiogram, which airs on Sundays. So for June 23rd, that's this coming Sunday, the time is 0227 UTC. That's 0227 UTC. And the frequency is 9,955 kilohertz, 9955 kilohertz. The setting is MFSK32. That's MFSK32. We are going to be issuing, as always, QSL cards. If you want more information, just go to our website, www.pcjmedia.com. And on the right menu, under Latest News, you can find all the details there, including the software you need to decode the message. Now, we've been sending these out for a couple of months now. Now, even though 9955 is targeting the Caribbean and Latin America, we've had people as far away as Europe and also the Pacific that have been able to decode it. So do check it out.
Call the PCJ answer line at country code 44-20-3286-1399. That's country code 44-20-3286-1399 and leave your comments and questions. On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is PCJ Radio.
And by the way, any messages that you leave on our hotline may be used on the program. Let's now talk about antennas. I'm sure that there are a number of new SWLs out there who probably think that building an external antenna is timely and costs a lot of money. Well, you're wrong. To find out more, we're now joined by our good friend Victor Gunatelica, who also happens to be PCJ's QSL manager, to talk more about what kind of antenna you can install, especially if you live in a city like most of you are doing right now.
Exactly, Keith. And looking through the big, huge number of reports I've been getting, most of them are city dwellers there, and they have two main problems. They either use a little portable radio or even maybe a communications type, but they have a problem of antennas. To where do I put my antenna? Some people have problems with the city council. They wouldn't allow you to have an antenna outside, even if you can just string a piece of wire outside your window to a telegraph pole. And then the other main problem is electrical noise. Now, almost everybody is plagued with this problem now, electrical noise. And if you don't have an external antenna, if you're just depending on the telescopic whip, what happens is our signal, or most signals that come in, are not enough to override the noise level, so that sometimes you are battling with the noise 50-50, sometimes you are completely covered, and other times you just manage. So the main thing is, if you have a portable radio, you are living in a city apartment maybe, you need some form of external antenna. Now, I'm not going to tell you to buy a Yagi antenna or big, no, just something simple. Try at least throwing a piece of wire outside your window if you can, or even inside your room, maybe like a loop experiment. That's the only thing I can give you as a positive response. And there are some antennas, commercially made active antennas, small loops, and things that you can hang on your curtain pole. Now, things like that will definitely increase your signal level. But sadly, sometimes it also increases the noise level. We are living in city apartments and in houses with lots of electrical appliances, and we have what we call a noise halo, and we live within that. If you can throw an antenna away from your house, maybe bring a lead in underground or just at ground level, a coaxial cable or something, and connect onto your antenna, that might improve the situation. And connecting, most portables might have an external connecting point, a screw maybe, or jack or something. Very often it comes with a little package that you get with the radio, an external wire. Now, what I am trying to tell you is, please don't throw it out to the best direction you think is right.
Right. Well, you know,
try it in different directions.
Just the other day, Victor, I was thinking about the very first antenna that I actually built for myself. The radio, this is going back to the late 70s. The radio was an old national radio. And the reception, this is when I was still living in Canada, the reception in the area where I lived was good, but I wanted to improve it. And somebody had told me something, and this was done during the Second World War in certain parts of Europe. Because many of our listeners may not know, but during the Second World War in Europe, countries that were occupied by the Nazis, they made radio listening illegal. So it was illegal to listen to the BBC and other stations that were broadcasting to Europe at the time. Now, what people did was they had to create, to make external antennas, but make them not seem like external antennas. Mm-hmm. And one idea that was given to me, and it truly works, is you build a clothesline, the kind of thing that you hang your laundry on. And you have a pulley at one side, a pulley at the other, so you can actually string your laundry along and move it along. And depending on what kind of clothesline you use, now you cannot use a rope-type clothesline because that's just not going to work. You have to use a wire-type clothesline. And it works well. And I built one myself that we even used at home to hang laundry on.
Yeah, and if the clothesline antenna you're using, the wire, has insulation, absolutely perfect. You don't have to strip the whole thing. Some people ask, have I got to strip the wire so that the bare copper or whatever has to be exposed? No, negative. Just throw it and put your laundry, your best shirt out, and it might even improve your reception.
Now, let's talk about one thing, Victor, that a lot of people would bring up. Now, this is something here in Taiwan that I have to do, and I'm sure that you have to do it in Sri Lanka because of we're now in a time of year where we get a lot of rain, a lot of thunder and lightning storms. So grounding, of course, is very important. Do all antennas have to be grounded? Because I know that some people are wondering, well, if I of course have 150 meters of wire, I could understand, but let's say it's only 1 meter or 2 meters. Do all antennas have to be grounded?
Well, if it's a matched antenna, for instance, if you are using a long wire antenna, there's no need to ground it. But if you are going for a specialized antenna, if you are using a dipole, or if you are using a special antenna, a good design, a matched antenna, definitely you have to ground it because the grounding part is also an important part of the antenna design. But if you are talking about simple antennas, throwing a little piece of wire, not necessary. Some radios cannot be grounded at all, unfortunately, the little portables and all that. So it all depends on what type of antenna you're using.
Are there any materials that an antenna, of course, don't mention obvious ones like rope or string or wood, but are there any type of metals that should not be used for antennas because they will create more noise than there should be?
Well, yes, definitely. I would ask you not to use plain galvanized wire because it will give you more noise than signal. You know, it's all about conductivity. If you can afford copper wire, excellent. Aluminium wire, fine. But just steel wire, it's not worth the length of the wire that you'll have to throw in. So I would say, I mean, today you can easily get some copper wire, you know, electrical wire, insulated wire, lamp cord, just buy a few meters of it and try it. It's not worth going in, throwing even 100 meters of galvanized wire. It's cheap, but it won't do you anything very good.
And that was our QSL manager, Victor Gunatelica, telling you and telling me the best kind of antenna to install if you live in a city-type environment. Of course, if you do have much more room, do string along a very long wire one. It really does improve things. But make sure it's grounded and make sure you use the right kind of wire. Otherwise, you're just going to get more noise. Now, what can we expect with propagation? Well, hopefully it'll be a little bit better than it was this Friday. At around 5 hours UTC on Friday, the 19-meter band and 16-meter band started fading away. I was listening to Radio Australia coming in really, really clearly, and then it just started fading until it was no more. And then about 30 minutes later, it came back. So what are propagation conditions going to be like? Here's our propagation guru, Dan Hensley.
Here's propagation for the week from June 22nd to June 28th, 2013. A 10.7 centimeter flux of 130 from June 22nd to June 24th. June 25th, 125. June 26th and 27th, 120. Finishing off at 115 on June 28th. The A index is 18 on June 22nd. On June 23rd, an A index of 12. An A index of 8 on June 24th. 5 from June 25th to June 27th, spiking at its highest for the last 2 years at 30. The KP index starts out at 4 on June 22nd and 23rd, rising to 3 on June 24th, with a KP index of 2 on June 25th, 26th, and 27th, finishing off at 5 on June 28th. Sunspot 1678 is passing out of view this week, leaving us with sunspots 1770, 72, and 73 through 75. AR 1775 is growing more complex, increasing the chance of an eruption. NOAA forecasters estimate a 20% chance of M-class solar flares on June 19th. The far side of the sun shows us an unnumbered active region seething with activity and appears capable of significant eruptions. NASA's Stereo Behind spacecraft is stationed over the sun's east limb with a good view of that hotspot. Back to you, Keith.
All right. Thanks, Dan. Before we go, I just want to remind you again about PCJ Radio International's transmissions to Southeast and East Asia Sundays at 13 hours UTC. On 11835 kilohertz, that's from 13 to 14 UT on 11835 kilohertz. The first 15 minutes of that one-hour broadcast is a special edition of Focus Asia Pacific with our good friend Andy Sennett, followed by the Happy Station Show. And what do we have this week? Well, you just have to tune in. I have to say, we've been getting so many reports, even from areas that are outside that out of the target area. So listen in, because you never know. But the way Dan Hensley describes things, it looks like we won't be hearing anything. But maybe, just maybe, he'll be wrong. If you wish to contact us, our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. mnp@pcjmedia.com. We'd love to hear from you. You can also listen to this program again, as well as all past editions, by going to www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus, all one word. So on behalf of the whole team, this is Keith Powell wishing you well. We'll see you again in 7 days' time. 73 and 88 to the ladies.